Hello and welcome to episode number 61 of the At U2 podcast, talking all things U2, album news, tour dates, community discussions, South American tour dates, community issues with stuff, all sorts of things we'll be talking about this episode. I've got three illustrious co-hosts, illustrious? Infamous? I don't know. You are what you are. Joining me for this episode from around the world. First, to my left, geographically, you'd be far east, I guess. Sienna, welcome back to the show.
Hey.
First time on the video version, right?
Yeah, it's exciting.
All right, so hopefully all the video gremlins hold up all the way across the pond. And below me, but also far east, is, I think, Aaron, or he's gone dark again. Aaron might be joining us. We'll see. Yeah, we'll come back to Aaron. He's our special correspondent from the darkness that is the bottom right quadrant. And the bottom left is Sherry, also to my far east, but bottom left of the podcast. Hello, Sherry.
Hey, have you found what you're looking for, Chris?
I've got friends who aren't U2 fans who tweet at me now, assuming everything I tweet is a U2 lyric if it's any sort of vague reference to anything. So I've fallen into their Sherry rabbit hole, I think, is the problem. Too much Sherry. Oh, Aaron's back. Aaron's forehead is back anyways. Yeah. So we might have a fun show. We've got a special guest coming on about halfway through, so stay tuned for that. But first off, the big news, of course, that if you're tuning in live or listening today, June 6th is as we record this, new Joshua Tree tour dates announced. Apparently, some people are excited about this, as they should be.
We can sense Fabiano's excitement all the way up north. I think that the whole of South America has been rejoicing ever since 9 a.m. Eastern.
So they've, I'm sure by now, if the podcast is the last place you're hearing, or the first place you're hearing this, I guess, it's time to maybe check out Twitter or at U2.com or U2.com, because they let everybody know this morning, Mexico, South America, and then also Chile, Brazil, I guess South America.
Colombia. It's their first trip to Colombia in their career.
And then also added Mexico City. There must be additional stops options there, obviously, as tickets sell out and things like that. I'm sure they'll add. But and then, of course, a bunch of more U.S. dates, too, in new cities that they didn't hit the first go around, starting in September. So, any sort of initial comments and feedback? Of course, none of us are in South America or in that geography that was pining for you two to come. So, but it's still exciting. I think we have on staff, I know Fernanda was tweeting saying, if you could ask fans to stop blaming South America because they think Songs of Innocent Experience will be delayed because of us. So, it's not their fault. Don't blame South America that they want to see you too, just like we all got to. But any comments on the tour announcement and sort of expectations and what it means?
I see it as the 9 North American dates are going to finance the South American dates. So they kind of needed to get the equipment back over from Europe and start working its way back to the West Coast and going south. So it doesn't surprise me that they tacked on 9 more U.S. dates, but I can feel the anguish from our Aussie and our New Zealand friends and everybody out in Australasia. So I really, really, really hope when the, what was it? Edge called it the Experience and Innocence Tour, which is the flip of Innocence and Experience, that when that one launches, that it launches down there and they get something super special that none of us will be able to get.
Yeah. That's Zahara Desert tweeted at us asking, what have the Australian New Zealand fans done to deserve this? It's been 7 years. So they're next on the list. Now that South America's gotten their petitions off and everything, New Zealand and Australia have to start, I guess.
But do you not think they will probably now continue into Australia, New Zealand, Japan? I mean, they're huge markets. So, you know, the Joshua Tree has turned out to be so successful. It's almost inevitable that they're going to go down there. And take it through to Christmas. It will be interesting to see how some Songs of Experience now will be released, whether they may just delay that a few months. The sales of the album doesn't matter anymore. That's the one big thing.
Right, the amount of actual sales they don't care as much about is in terms of dollar values and whatever. It's the touring and, yeah.
Yeah, I just think that the production costs for a stadium tour are going to be far more than what the production costs would be for the arena tour. So you figure if they hit Australia in around Christmas, it's their summertime down there. So the weather's going to be beautiful. But usually the U2ers like to spend Christmas back in Dublin, back in their respective homes. So I would think, if anything, they would launch in January. And if the rumors that were circulating on our on U2 songs of this album cover with a December 1st a date on it, then they could launch, you know, January, February with Experience and Innocence. I just think that the way that they've mined the U.S. market in 2017, they've taken a lot of our money this year. So I think for them to come back in 2018, they're not going to get the type of audience that that would come out. So I don't see them coming back to the U.S. much before 2019, but I could be completely wrong on that. And I hope I am.
Because you have more money to give, Sherry, right? Is what you're saying. You'll find a way.
I have a lot of charitable giving to the Bank of Larry. So there you go.
I think also it'll be interesting to see what may happen now just after Brussels, because usually the band normally goes to south of France, generally. Edge certainly, and their families. Maybe that they may take an opportunity just to finish off songs of Experience, all the relevant marketing that needs to be done, whether it means more photographs, promo photographs to be done, shooting videos. There seems to be some rumours that that may be happening in this late summer and fall. But yeah, the schedule release looks a little strange because we're normally used to having long, long gaps between U2 projects, and then all of a sudden we've got two or three on the go all of a sudden. So we're spoiled by comparison. And it's great as well, man. The rest of the world is getting to see the Joshua Tree tour. I mean, it's just wonderful.
Or they're trying to fulfill all of their contractual obligations before the end of the contract. Not that I'm cynical or anything.
For love or money, or love of money. The other, so well, there's lots more to be said about that. And obviously, as dates and things come out, and we'll obviously cover that on the podcast, and be sure to be watching at u2.com, of course, for news as it happens, because the podcast isn't exactly breaking news. But in terms of other random stuff around the U2 universe, Adam's kimono, which we referenced last episode, I just wanted to follow up, it's taken on a Twitter account of its own. Mm-hmm. I forgot to actually write it down. Is it just Adam's kimono, I'm assuming, or?
Yes, AdamsKimono.
Yeah, so joining the pantheon of other Twitter handles related to various parts and or clothing of U2, members of U2. Kimono enthusiast, I hang out with Adam Clayton from time to time. So very much worth following, if for no reason than just to get an occasional glimpse of.
Seriously, guys, if we'd have seen it in merchandise, we'd have bought one, wouldn't we?
Right. Let's be honest. Exactly. That would have made that first Periscope concert or call that night after the show much more interesting, I think, if we were all wearing kimonos. For sure.
Walking home would have been a bit strange, but
Yeah, definitely. So, and Sienna, this is now the second time you've been on the podcast, but something that I know Matt asked me to reference with you and just to draw fans or readers' attention to is your article on U2 teen or on the, at U2.com, but U2 teens being a fan under 20, which you posted back in late May, I guess, a couple weeks ago. But it's kind of funny because they're just an article went around. I think Sherry, you had shared it originally about how millennials hate U2 or something like that. And
from a Miami based site.
Yeah. And obviously it's all just like generalizations and all that kind of stuff. But we had Mason Merritt on last episode and you this time and sort of getting a bit of the unintentionally, coincidentally, or whatever, with that article kind of getting the counterpoint, I guess, to that, where the big broad term of millennials that you guys fall under. Yeah. Anyways, obviously, you are a fan of U2. And I guess just in terms of your article that you wrote and sort of maybe in response to something like that, those kind of headlines or whatever, what is your response to that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, because at U2 tweeted out some questions about being a U2 fan under 20, and it like so many people responded, and I was reading them all, and they're just like, you don't, like, in England I'm like the only one. Like I have no friends who like you too. And like to read all these people from around the world is just it's so cool. And we all like the same sort of era as well. So it's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're definitely not, you had your first, was your first concert experience was Innocence and Experience this last
go round?
Yeah. Tell me about that. What was the,
So my first concert was in the LA Forum and it was only like a few days in, I think, to the tour. So everything was a bit new and I remember it just after the interval and it was invisible, obviously. And my dad didn't know what invisible was. And he was like, Sienna, what's this song? And I was like, Dad, it's invisible. How do you not know this? Because it's like the two generations of fans. Right. Obviously, he knew all like War and stuff. And I knew their new singles. So that was really cool.
So you got to educate him on the new stuff. And he got to educate you on the old stuff. Was that your dad? Did your dad draw you into U2 in the first place?
Yeah. Yeah, it was him.
Gotcha. Well, maybe I'll have to have a father-daughter podcast sometime with episode with you. You and your dad. And Sherry, you back going looping back around to the Vancouver show, you had I don't think we ever officially covered it. We were going to sort of we talked about it or tweeted about it maybe a little bit, but and you definitely tweeted about it, obviously. But getting your picture signed and some stuff at the Vancouver show, that was kind of a cool experience for you.
Yeah, I had gotten tipped off that on Bono's birthday he wanted to spend a little bit of time with the fans that that hold him so dear. So we all queued up and I was lucky enough to get, ironically, it's my copy of Tim Neufeld's book signed. Originally, I was just going to get it signed and send it to Tim and complain that the publisher had sent me a marked copy and I wanted a new copy and surprise him with the autograph. But then as Bono came around and he was signing, I said, hi, I'm Sherry from Duxbury. Thank you so much for answering my question on the Daltons. And he said, that was you? Grabbed the book back and did a portrait of me as a cowgirl and asked me how I spelt Sherry and gave me a personal note in the book. So sorry, Tim, I couldn't send it back after that. But I can confirm that rock stars kind of smell like exhaust fumes because that's all you could smell back there. But then in talking with some members of the crew, the correct term on what do rock stars smell like is complex.
Complex.
So, and they wouldn't go into any more detail than that. So I think that is our official statement that when we hear Adam ask or Bono ask,
how do rock stars smell like?
The answer is complex. Right. So
I think we should probably stop asking because anything more will get us restraining orders probably. Or at least for Sherry. But yeah, it's really cool. And I think if you probably somewhere back in your Twitter account, I know there's we'll try and find a link to it and throw it in the show notes too, to pictures that you had obviously of the moment and shortly
after. Oh yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, I'll share those. Good. And ironically, the week later, I was back home, shopping in our local Target of all places. And somebody asked me, hey, how's the Edge doing? And so I just saw him last week. He's doing great. And I'm like, why is he asking me about the Edge? Well, I had out my Samsung Galaxy 8 Edge phone. He was talking about my phone and not the Edge, but I just casually, oh yeah, he's doing great. As if I'm like BFFs with the band member, you know?
And in a little bit of follow-up from the last episode as well, speaking of Mason, CJ had messaged in asking about Mason's plan for GA from the last episode, and I'm wondering how it will work if he just shows up. So he was, just briefly, he was going to show up. His parents were going to come later. He was going to save a spot for his two parents, I guess, is what he was asking. So, or what he was saying he was going to do. And Mason's not on the episode to actually tell us what ended up happening, but CJ was wondering how will it work if he shows up at GA, Mason, and gets a rail spot and his parents are back at the hotel. Does he just save two extra numbers for them in the air quotes unofficial GA count? And Sherry, I think you had responded somewhere because it just depends who's there doing sort of GA line management, because there isn't an official police or stadium crew doing that, right?
Yeah. On average, what ends up happening is when you show up a day or two before the show to join the GA line, it's a fan led line. So the general rule is once you get your number, there's normally a check-in in the morning and a check-in in the evening. It's normally like 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. type of deal in the days leading up so that you're not actually queuing for days in the spot. But then on the day of the show, the morning check-in is normally at like 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. And at that check-in, everybody in your party needs to be with you. And it's the investment of time in order to get the rail spot that you're looking for. I know that there were a lot of people who were disappointed that, hey, you know, my kid's in school or my wife doesn't get out of work. And unfortunately, you know, this is a process that has worked for at least the past 15 years. And so it's been the rite of passage. The fans who are working with the formation of the GA line usually coordinate with the venue security staff. And then on the day of the show, usually there's somebody from U2's own production team who will come out and coordinate so that everybody's kept safe, everybody's where they're supposed to be. You can generally leave for like 15 to 20 minutes for like a bladder break or to get a little bit of food, but they really shun anybody who shows up at like 3 after everybody's been out there for, you know, 6-7 hours waiting in the line. So in this particular case, you can make friends with the people around you, see if there's some flexibility. Usually there can be, but if you've got somebody in that line from 5 in the morning and somebody shows up at like 4:30 in the afternoon and gets in front of you, there's usually a lot of grumbles about that.
Yeah. And probably depending on the country and or city that you're in, will be determining how grumpy the people get and what activities happen thereafter. Fabiano in the chat room, it's funny because there's a couple of South American folks in the chat room kind of celebrating, I guess, today being a beautiful day because of the announcement. But Fabiano's saying Nate, Arnie, and other fans that coordinate, huge thanks for them. So, yeah, if you're at all interested in getting right up to that line or right up to the front of the stage and that kind of stuff, which we talked about in the last episode and at others too, you're just going to have to put in the time, I guess, is the gist of it. I know,
today is June 6th. The Pittsburgh show is tomorrow on the 7th. The GA line formed at 7 in the morning yesterday, June 5th.
Yeah, yeah, which we saw.
So.
I think it's important to note as well that it's not the real end all to be at the front. It really isn't because, you know, even if you just turn up for the concert on the day and you've got a GA ticket, you'll get a great, great view, even if you're just down by the mixing desk or whatever. And that, you know, the whole of the screen is so fantastic for this show that you will be absolutely transfixed by what you see on the screen and on the B stage and on the main stage. So I think what Sherry's referred to, you know, it's a very fair process. It does seem a little harsh, but I think, you know, there's so many dedicated YouTube fans who do put a lot of time and investment in. I think overall it's fair. But as I say, it's not a huge problem if you I'm prepared to queue and be in line. You'll still get a fantastic view.
Yeah, and the people who are there, I know, are very friendly and stuff, and you just have to ask and sort of follow the line to the front and then follow it all the way to the back, and you'll figure out where you stand and or where you're sitting or standing, I guess, depending on how long.
Which, as long as we're talking about GA lines, if you filed a complaint with BC Place in Vancouver, you have until June 15th. To respond to an email that BC Place sent out to folks who did file a complaint. What they're looking for is your Ticketmaster order number. They are still processing all the GA complaints from what had happened. And while it wasn't a complete promise, in my phone call with their staff there, I was told that anybody with GA would be offered a refund. I don't know if it's a full refund, a partial refund, but they are going through that process. I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
But the deadline for that is June 15th. So if you didn't get an email, check your trash bin or your spam filter. But the emails were sent out about a week and a half ago.
All right, we're going to try and blast through. We've got a few Ask At U2 questions that were sent in. So you can tweet out use the hashtag Ask At U2, and we'll definitely be covering a bit of the talking about the tour itself and Sherry and Aaron's perspective on it, and then also using Sienna as sort of a person to speak for those who have yet to see the show. And but we're going to try and get through a couple of questions from the Ask at You 2 hashtag that were sent in. And the first one is a nonsense one because it's from a buddy of mine, but just said, if someone formed a band named U3, would they sound like U2 but with more cowbell? And the answer is yes. At this train 9900, sorry, he said, is the day after seeing U2 too soon to have withdrawals? And I think it happens, if not the day after, that evening, probably, even as you're trying to fall asleep and the songs are ringing in your head. And I know for me, not having to watch everybody head south from Vancouver to see them in Seattle while I flew home and then watched all the reports with its own special kind of U2 withdrawal hell. But what do you guys think?
I undoubtedly had withdrawal symptoms. I mean, I flew back right. On the Sunday straight after the show, and on the Saturday after the show, and I 12 hours back on the plane to the UK, and it hit me bad. It really did. It was like cold turkey, I'm sure.
And it is different. Like, obviously, you guys both are seeing them again, so there's gonna you know. The stars will shine again. But Sherry, what about for you?
Yeah, flying home on the red eye and not being able to do Seattle was a bit of a bummer. But for me, I like to see the tour at the very beginning, but then I don't want to see it for like a solid month because I know that they're still working out all of their little kinks and quibbles and honing in on certain things. So when I see them in a couple of weeks in Foxborough, I'll probably have, a similar experience, but the songs will be tighter. It'll be better. So I had a little bit of a withdrawal, but because I knew I was seeing them again, it wasn't that bad. And I also knew as soon as I got off the airplane, within a few hours, I'd be piping into a Mixler stream and being able to listen to the show that I just saw. So as long as there is a show coming up, it's a little bit better. But, the last show of a tour when, it's going to be like a 3-year drought, that's when I really crash.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, they were very tight anyhow. I mean, I know a lot of people said, oh, the Seattle show was so much better than Vancouver. And I'm sure it was. But I think the shock of seeing the screen made a lot of the watching the band in Vancouver quite difficult because it was so revolutionary, the screen. And I don't know, because so many of the songs we'd heard before anyhow, there's only a few songs that we'd never heard live. Whether you watch them live or watch them on video since, whether you go back to 87 or not. So there's only a handful of songs that were new. What I was pleased about is that it was a proper playback of the album in order, but no revamp. There wasn't an acoustic version or somebody playing bongos through it rather than drums. It was a proper straight version of the album, which is exactly what we wanted to hear. It was great.
You're giving me flashbang at the Sun off the Pop Mart tour.
Yeah. Aaron's jumping ahead to our roundtable discussion with his, but we'll, and I apologize. Aaron's audio seems to be cutting in and out a little bit. And now Sherry's just disappearing down into the ether for some reason, but
I'm still here.
Yeah. We can still hear you. So
I'm already small enough, people.
At Tim Jahar asked, and I know this was a question about Chicago, because I know there was some worries about thunderstorms and stuff, but what happens if weather, thunderstorms or whatever are forecasted or happen at the show? And, I know in previous years, when I was at the Edmonton Pop Mart show, I know there's rain and thunder happening basically as the show ended. They do have stuff to obviously cover gear and stuff. If it's not a torrential downpour, I think the show goes on as far as what I've seen, weather or safety permitting, I guess. But in the event that it would go really badly, severe thunderstorm, tornado, whatever, I would assume they would cancel the show and issue a refund and or reschedule it, right? Would be the general idea.
In Chicago, what they said was it was rain or shine, and if there were thunderstorms, that there were safety zone areas within this stadium that everybody would retreat to. And I believe in the U.S., that would be standard practice, only if there was like a hurricane or a tornado, but I think that they would do anything other than, but if it's torrential rain, the show is rain or shine.
Yeah, that's, I think, just like any sporting event or any sort of major event like that, it's It's on until they say it's not, and then if it's not, they'll cancel and obviously or reschedule and refund. But the band obviously can only do so much as far as coming back. So it sucks. I know for those of us who are like, that's the one show you're going to see and you're worried about weather. I understand that for sure. So at Mysterious Days asked, why isn't U2 performing in Colorado or Arizona on this Joshua Tree tour? And I would go live to our sports correspondent, Matt McGee, but he's not here, and not Matt McGee is here. But basically, one theory anyways would be football is going on, scheduling issues, that kind of thing. It does seem like the obvious place to go to would be in Arizona, right, where the tour, the Joshua Tree or the Rattle and Hum video was recorded and things like that. But yeah, not this time. Sorry, I'm going quick just so we get through some of these, because I know they've been in the queue for a little while. At Mysterious Days also asked, the fan clips sent in to sing along with Ordinary Love that people submitted, and we haven't seen anything of that. We thought maybe it would appear on the Joshua Tree stage, perhaps. It might be something that's way delayed and waiting for the Songs of Experience record and promotion somehow, or maybe just some other random event that we don't even know about, obviously. Any quick theories on where that is at?
No, I completely forgot about that, actually. We all probably had a go at that one way or the other over the, probably was it a few weeks just before the first show, wasn't it? It was quite short notice.
Yeah, no, just it was quite, because I remember I was going to do it, and then it was like, oh wait, it's only in a few days' time. So like, I thought it was short notice for the tour and it was going to be used, but Ordinary Love obviously is not on it, is it? So
yeah, so we'll see. You'd hope that they wouldn't put fans through that. I mean, not that it was that exhausting, I'm sure, but you were, a bunch of fans are submitting stuff, and hopefully they don't just end up in the bin somewhere that they forgotten about or whatever. That should maybe be, Sherry, your next mission is to find out where the Ordinary Love clips ended up, now that you know what Roxbury smell
like. Well, I submitted
like
one, so I would like to know where mine ended up anyway, probably in the trash bin.
At This Train 9900, we had a few sort of repeats this time, but will their appearance at Bonnaroo Friday, which, where are we here? I don't know which Friday. Yeah. That's this Friday?
Yeah, it's this week.
Yeah, be webcast in part or in whole. I don't know if you guys have heard. I haven't heard anything official about any sort of webcast.
Hopefully somebody's going to be periscoping it.
Yeah, I'm sure the usual suspects of Periscope, et cetera, might work out, but I don't know if they have an official. I know, what was the other festival that was just happened a little while ago where they definitely published YouTube videos of the show afterwards of specific songs, but it wasn't a live stream.
Is Bonnaroo not actually broadcast in the States on television? No,
it's not like,
Glastonbury.
But yeah, I don't see anything official from them as far as any sort of streaming, anything like that. So
we certainly haven't seen anything from U2.com saying subscriber special or anything like that.
Yeah. So I would suspect that they might not, and they might put, I'm sure they'll be recording it. Obviously they record pretty much everything, and maybe they'll put out a special video of a song or two if it goes off really well in that venue, but we'll see. All right. The Fabiano actually asked in the chat room, since he tuned in live, we'll throw this one in at you guys too. And because I've been curious too, where can we expect, assuming that there is going to be one, I guess, where can we expect that the Joshua Tree DVD or Blu-ray or whatever format you happen to be watching it on gets recorded? Which city do you think will get picked? And is there a method to it beyond just a good show or picking one song from, you know, the best version of each song from a city?
It's probably going to be South America. I don't know. It seems to go around by continents, doesn't it? We had Europe last time, North America before that.
It would be ideal if it was down there simply because of the Mothers of the Disappeared tie-in.
Absolutely.
And they haven't done a release from that continent, if I remember correctly. Pop Mart was from Mexico City.
Yeah.
And all the other releases have been either North America, Europe. You had the Lovetown Tour special that was in Sydney, but that wasn't an official DVD release. So I would certainly hope it would be coming from South America.
And they definitely, like, what was the U2 3D was recorded. Yeah, that's Fabiano was just in the chat room one step ahead of me, was here. It was recorded there, but it wasn't officially sort of released as a big concert documentary or video. So but definitely,
and it wasn't the complete show either,
right? So the fans down there definitely are way more enthusiastic in their showing or their appearance of enthusiasm, just judging off that video anyways. So if nothing else, it'd be a good show to show off.
You're going to want a stadium full of enthusiastic people going bat crazy. I would insert other words there, but I know that there's babies who listen to
CJ's babies listening. Yeah.
That is going to be the audience that they're going to want. They're not going to want a whole bunch of middle-aged people with a lot of gray hair with their phones up for those audience shots. They're going to want that audience from South America.
They want the millennials that hate them. So make sure you jump, Sienna, when you go, because you might. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if do you assume that there will be one? It makes the money, obviously. You'd think they would, right? Helps pay for a kimono or two.
Yep.
All right. So, well, we've sort of looped around this in various ways, but we wanted to have a part two to our Joshua Tree 2017 review, just because so many of the at U2 staff are keen to chat about it. And I'm sure the folks out there are listening are just as excited to keep sort of hearing about it as the tour goes on. And so we had part one, we have part two now, we might even have part three or four, who knows. We'll see if enough people keep wanting to basically forcing me to have more discussions about it in a nice gentle way. So I guess
better than talking about passengers, Chris.
True. Uh-oh, now we're gonna get hate mail from Ian and others. Maybe, I guess, starting with Aaron, you've seen one show so far, the same one as I.
Yeah.
And you sort of alluded to the screen and everything that sort of was there. And I know I was standing a couple feet away from you as you were watching the show and taking it all in. And what were your thoughts and what was your experience of Joshua Tree?
For me, it was just incredible. I mean, I've done lots of YouTube. You know, it goes back 30 years for me when I was 18, 19 at university when I saw the summer shows in 87, maybe in the UK and a bit of Europe. And it transported me, literally transported me back to that time. For that time when the Street started, right through the first three or four songs, I was just absolutely overwhelmed with emotion. It was just incredible. And the screen is just the most amazing thing. We're reading, it was a little bit of contradiction, but it seems to be that it was filmed in 8K, which is and obviously a new higher definition format. Even if it wasn't 8K, it was certainly much better than any 4K HD that I've seen. And it was phenomenal. And I have to say, the films that Anton Corbijn had put together went so well with the songs. I mean, it was just perfect, and it was incredible to read since that he only filmed them a few weeks prior in some cases. But, I thought it was wonderful, and it didn't feel nostalgic, which is what I thought it would feel, probably because that quite a few of the songs off the Joshua Tree are played live each tour. Anyhow, we normally get three or four, so, you know, get another seven, what's the big deal? I thought the blend at the beginning with you know, introducing the lead in from War with Sunday Bloody Sunday and New Year's Day in particular, I think that works very well. I'm probably not so much a fan of the latter third at the moment. I don't know, perhaps a bit old school about it. I think they may have just focused a bit more on some of the B-sides, but, you know, it's a stadium show. It's there for a lot of people who probably haven't even seen U2 ever. Seeing you two since the 1980s, so they have to focus on that audience.
Yeah, and Sherry, you're actually in this. I was thinking you'd been to more shows, but yeah, you're in the same boat as that Aaron and I as well, right? You've seen one show so far.
Well, I was physically at one show, but I have listened to all of them. Chicago 2, I was actually able to watch with the help of Periscope. I still stand by what I wrote in OTR, of the day after Vancouver. Certainly certain things have tweaked. The band still hasn't settled in on a definitive set list, you know. Miss Sarajevo, or also known as Miss Syria, keeps getting moved around. deciding to do elevation after Beautiful Day or elevation after One, there's still a bit of set list movement there. So I think that they're just trying to keep it fresh for themselves in the production on it. I can definitely sense that the audience is a different vibe than what we're used to within the arenas. It's a similar vibe to what the U2 360 tour was, except that a lot more people know the album that they're touring. So with this tour, a lot more people know the Joshua Tree than they did No Line on the Horizon. So it's a little bit more of a vibrant crowd, but it's still very much a greatest hits crowd. So, you know, for the fans who would love to see them pull out a really deep cut, this is not the tour for it. Which is why the whole protest over the removal of A Sort of Homecoming really took shape, because it is a more well-known song than some of the others, but it's such a rarity that for the diehard fans, that was the one that felt like they're catering to us. And to have that song removed out of the set list kind of felt like, you know, a stab in the heart almost. I know that in Vancouver, that was the song that I was most looking forward to next to Exit. And just to experience that, that was one of those bucket list songs that had eluded me for all the shows that I've seen. So I'm happy that it's back in. I hope it stays back in, but not at the loss of Bad, right. You know, which is what happened in Chicago too. They gave us A Sort of Homecoming, but they omitted Bad. No, the two of them have to be in the same show.
We don't need to start another petition to.
You need to do Seattle. Seattle's set list was perfection.
Yeah. Yeah, which a lot of it is kind of frustrating, especially if that's the one show you get to see and they cut that song or whatever, and you're kind of like, oh, but I really wanted to see that one song. You know, you're getting the Joshua Tree set completely, obviously, this or the CD from start to finish. But those little extra stuff is kind of fun. And that's, like you said, the greatest hits sort of audience that's there definitely jumps along to Pride and to the well-known hits, Beautiful Day, etc., get all the whole audience jumping. So it's hard for as the band to, you know, even in that moment at the beginning of the set list, like to just throw in one song, one B-side, something or whatever, when they're on the sort of tree stage as a little nod to the fans. It feels like, how hard would it be? But it is, I don't know, you can sort of sense a bit of like you when you're losing the audience, even as they go off to buy drinks or they're getting drunker or whatever around you. And then to throw in a sort of homecoming after that is kind of like, well, you've kind of lost half the crowd and you might not get them back in a while. So,
yeah. And the only two songs in the set list, with the exception of The Little Things, which is completely new, the only two songs that haven't been on any best of compilations or the U2 18 is A Sort of Homecoming and Ultraviolet. So even if you just owned the best of series and Joshua Tree, you've got 19 out of the 21 songs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point too. So, yeah, it remains to be seen, I guess, what they do. And we had Matt's been doing an interview with Willie Williams, email interview, and so released a sort of a teaser of that just before they brought A Sort of Homecoming back, where Willie had said that we will see it again. So hopefully, it wasn't just that one that one concert in response to Willie saying, "Hey, some fans are emailing, so you better just play it once." Then. Move on.
Well, Chicago's known for the mafia, right. As is Boston. I'm just saying.
Veiled threats there, Sherry. Very veiled. So, Sienna, you've been from across the pond, I guess. Are you watching Periscopes paying attention to that kind of stuff, or trying to be sort of experience it innocently, as it were?
So, because London is the first of the Europe dates, I thought I'd wait. Like, obviously, I'm listening to them, but I'm not watching them. So I thought I'd wait to see it, because I'm seeing one of the London shows. I'd wait to see it, and then in Europe, then I can sit up all night. Like, then I can do it. but yeah, I thought I'd wait just a little bit. But, like, The Little Things is just my new favourite song. So I've listened to enough. So yeah.
To be fair, for us in the UK, the show's at 4 o'clock in the morning start. So you know, you really have to be dedicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am officially a walking zombie right now.
Yeah, it's a little bit much, I guess, to be up in that time zone. I know. Do you have the common question that people, especially if they're going to GA, and we kind of alluded to this earlier, Aaron, you mentioned this too, is sort of where to stand? What would you suggest doing if you don't have a ticket already? Where should they get a ticket, GA or in a seat? And Sienna, what are you doing for ticketing at your shows?
We've got GA, yeah. So actually, what Cher was saying earlier was really interesting because when in IE we did like really high seats. But we thought we'd go in the crowd this time because I'm going with my family. So, yeah, first time in GA. Should be good.
And Aaron and Sherry. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I've got GA for all of my shows in Europe now. I'm not sure, actually, what I think about sitting. I mean, for I&E, I did a few shows up in the seats, and I quite enjoyed some of the shows more than I may have expected to. Interesting question. I think it depends on where you're sitting. I think if it's a more of a head-on view, then I think I would probably enjoy that more. But, of course, that's quite a distance away. So I don't know. I think once you're in the seats, anyway, you're a long way away, aren't you? So.
Yeah, Sherry's posted some fans shots from like way up top of like Soldier Field or wherever, and it just like it's a long way down to to the band.
Yeah, and there are definite sight lines where you have obstructed view. If you are at the end zone, you have the production tent that could block your entire view of the tree stage. Or if you are at the very end of the row on the sides of the stage, you could have a perpendicular view of the screen and not be able to see a bloody thing on that screen. Yeah. You could be stuck behind. Yeah. You could be stuck behind one of the production towers that's blocking a view. So we were very spoiled on Innocence and Experience where there was just a slight sliver where you couldn't see anything. With this tour, there are people who are bummed that they spent a lot of money and they only get half of the screen because of the overhang of the stadium seating, that they can't see anything from the midpoint of the screen up, or you know, as I said, you've got the entire production tent that's blocking it. Those should be the $35 obstructed view seats. At least you're in there to hear. And in GA, obviously, you know, the taller you are, the more advantage you have.
So grow is the bottom line, which it can't be, it shouldn't be understated, I guess, the idea that there was times in the show that I was at where I was just kind of annoyed with the people around me because the people were kind of moving, not the At You Two crew that was around me, but the other people, you know, kind of moving in and out and bumping past you and holding a beer over your head while they're celebrating because Pride is going on. You're like, please don't jump and spill that on me and wreck the whole experience for all of us because I will be punching people. But the so like being in the seats, there is a, if you're not going to be up, you know, catching some of Larry's sweat as some of you are wishing you could, then being in a seat actually isn't that bad an idea because you get that spot and it's your space and you still can have a drunk beside you, I guess, but it may be a
and
drunk.
Some of those seats have convenient cup holders.
Exactly.
So you're not having to hold on to your beer the whole time.
Exactly. So I just balanced mine on Aaron's head, but it worked out okay. No. He's got a really flat top there, so it worked really well. But any other comments, I guess, for anybody or Sienna, any questions as far as the show as you're looking forward to? I know it's a little ways away, but looking forward to seeing.
I'm curious about Ultraviolet because the 360 version they did from Rose Bowl is like my favorite version ever. So is it going to live up to it? That's what I want to ask.
I hate to say this, but Bono doesn't hang by a microphone during the production of it this time. But if you're into a feminist message,
I love the video for it.
Yeah, that's the song that is making me so excited to bring my 8-year-old daughter to. I want her to hear the message about how important women are in society, and I think that. Despite what Mr. McGee thinks, I think that that's one of the highlights of the show.
Okay.
Just because he's, I agree too. I think the overall emotion, and especially watching a video version of it later, I think on the concert DVD or whatever, will have even more impact. But it is the band themselves are outside of Exit, I guess, maybe. I don't know. I think this is a fair statement to say, but outside of Exit, they're not as theatrical themselves in their performance of the songs. They let the screen and the music do the talking more, which has its benefits and its drawbacks, obviously. I do love the way that the band physically got into playing Ultraviolet, like you said, Sienna. And so it isn't quite as there, but yeah, I think the overall message kind of makes up for it a bit. So, but I
also think that it limits the band's opportunity to become injured during the show by them limiting the amount of movement that they do because they are getting old, you know?
Yeah, they kind of move collectively. So if Ed starts going off the stage as they head up for Streets Have No Name, someone can grab them back and yeah, they kind of move as a group, stay, have your buddy, don't lose each other.
Everybody's got a study buddy.
Yeah, exactly. And we all want to be Larry's buddy. All right. What we wanted to quickly in air quotes here, but also cover is a lot of folks have been getting and got their 30th anniversary super deluxe or various deluxe editions, box sets and music and that's arrived. It was released on iTunes, etc. And Sherry and Aaron are holding theirs up. Sienna, you and I are sitting with nothing, I guess, right? I just have the iTunes download, so I can't really hold up my iTunes account. But we'll be the people who can ask questions, I guess, about it. But also, as part of that, we have a special guest who we wanted to bring on, and hopefully everything works here. We'll just...
sort of a musical journey, really.
It's nice to be in the company of such wonderful At You Two people. And especially Sienna. Hi.
Welcome. Hey. Thank you.
Crazy world of you two. You're the youngest. I know Aaron says he's the youngest, but he's...
For a long time, John.
Sounds like you've got a really thick Canadian accent too, like me.
The thick Canadian Geordie accent.
So, Big Wave, why introduce yourself to the folks who may not be aware of who and what you are.
Well, I'm like yourselves, I'm a U2 fan since a long time ago, since the War album, actually. And I help out on U2.com, mainly in Zootopia, with Michelle and Max, who say hello, by the way, extend their greetings to the U2 crew and your mods, Kenny and all, who I missed recently at the Alarm Show in Glasgow. We almost had a pint, but we'll catch up in Twickenham maybe. So, yeah, I help out with things over here. And it's been busy today. I guess everyone's excited about the new announcement. The rumours have been kind of almost right again. So, Max is particularly excited, Mexico on the bill. And Michelle, she was at Chicago. That was the first one of us three kind of thing to be at the shows at the weekend. And she's kind of loved it.
She's buzzing from it, I guess, eh?
Absolutely, yeah. Still coming down. I heard you talking about that earlier.
When are you getting to experience the Joshua Tree 30th anniversary tour?
Probably not till London. I keep kind of, London probably. Maybe before, we'll see. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
But I think Toronto people are going to be there. I was trying to get to Toronto, but I wouldn't rule it out. Sometimes stuff happens last minute. I would love to see the band on the North American version because it always kind of changes, doesn't it?
Right.
I don't have any inside information on this, but I'm assuming they'll tailor it a bit more to the Europe in some ways, however you can tailor it. We'll see.
Well, we would love to see you in Cleveland.
Cleveland?
What? Yes.
What is that?
The last show.
Where is Cleveland? Is it near? Is it near?
It's south of Toronto.
All right.
Yeah. But not by much.
There's a little cluster of North American things, isn't there? Toronto kind of cluster to me. I'm on the map. whatever. Yeah, I'd love to be there. I would love to meet up with people who I've only met online up to now. It almost happened in Dublin, didn't it? Like last time round, but it didn't. But any of you guys to Europe?
No, I'm not. I don't think Sienna is, but Sherry, you're not as well, right? You're not heading across the pond this time?
No.
Yeah.
No, this is not a tour I can do Europe for.
But yeah, I'll just mention too, and Fabiano in the chat room had mentioned, maybe you saw this already, but a huge thanks to you, Big Wave, when you helped in Brazil with the Facebook pages that were disabled and things like that. So that's kind of your role as a bit of a fan advocate, I guess, as it were, in sort of helping fans interact with the band in various ways and speaking on behalf of, perhaps, depending which way the argument is going.
He's our fairy godfather.
Well, see, there's a great team at YouTube.com who, Sherry, we've all met some of them, I guess, Aaron, you know, and the YouTube.com team, they're like to be known as. So I'd like to, you know, big them up in a big fashion, because, you know, that doesn't get publicized enough, what they do behind the scenes. So it's a bit of an interaction with like fans and in the YouTube.com team and other things you get involved in, and it mainly to do with fan stuff. And it's great to be part of that kind of process to help people out. You can't always keep everybody happy, you know. Today we've had like people kind of not happy about the pre-sale code arrangement, which is different slightly than last time round. But, you know, I think there's a lot of thought goes into how these things are presented, and you're never, ever going to please everybody. So, like, what we're able to do, like the mods, is, like, hopefully point people in the right direction and pick up on what you guys are. You guys do your thing fantastically. I'm so jealous at times, I have to say, because you write stuff with a kind of a free hand that sometimes we don't have. But it's give and take, you know. It's often we're thinking similar things, and you guys are on the ball usually.
Most of us, yeah.
So, John, the biggest question everybody is having has to deal with the pre-sale codes. If you've used all four of your tickets on your pre-sale code, there is not going to be a new code issued, correct?
That's correct. This time around, no, I double-checked on this because that was, people were asking from the outset, we're going to get new codes. And, like, each tour is different. I mean, like, one comment was on a 360 tour, we got kind of two codes. But the thing is, with the 360 tour, that was over 3 years, if you remember. And it was kind of... it was over two or three subscription periods. So basically, what is on the youtube.com/help page is how it is, basically. Double check. If you've used your four codes this subscription period, even if you take out a new subscription, you won't get any more codes for this.
But if you take out a new subscription in your dog's name...
Well,
which I'm sure some people are going to do in the name of their goldfish or their grandmother who is now deceased for 25 years.
Officially, that never comments.
Yeah. don't incriminate yourself. Like, don't.
like, you know, we've all, as we get on in years, like, you know, and we all have sons, daughters who want to sign up to YouTube.com and, you know, experience it for the first time. So, you've got to be careful with having too many accounts from the same address. We've had issues in the past. It can throw up like a red flag if you get 20 subscriptions with the same credit card and house address, then you're going to run into problems. But no, that doesn't happen that often, what we see. So this, this is a good opportunity. Well put, Sherry. If you've got a grandma who has never seen you two before, and she wants to, here's a great opportunity to see it, to see the band in Colombia. That's one that excites me. I'd love to be able to go to Colombia. I've already made a request. I've heard nothing.
Not months yet. Yeah. You can find out the night before. Tickets are waiting for you. You just have to find a way to get there.
Well,
yeah.
If there's a will, there's a way, isn't there?
Now, Fabiano Chatterton said all Brazilians are in doubt with that because we used ours to buy US and European shows, and now we want to use them for Brazil. So, which is exactly, I mean, that's just the nature of the beast, and that's sort of how it goes. And it sucks for the individual, but I understand you're trying to prevent scalping, you're trying to prevent all that kind of stuff. And
there's usually like little asterisk around there saying, you know, please be aware that additional dates may be announced or whatever. I learned through my 2015 experience not to use all of my tickets on a code because you never know when additional shows are going to get announced. And with this tour, they're actually offering 4 tickets to a code. On the last tour, it was only 2. So, right. You know, they're doing as much as they can do.
I was wondering whether it would have been possible to get South American shows if they could have looked at the database to see where people lived in which country and give some priority to, say, the Brazilians or the Colombians who are in the database and offer them the opportunity first and then have a pre-sale.
It's a good point. But I wasn't privy to the kind of the decision-making on the pre-sales, yeah. We're kept in the loop as much as possible, but you've got to remember that we are fans as well. You do get trusted with certain informations, but I appreciate how tricky it can be for those up the chain, up the ladder at a different level of whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But that's a good point. And one thing that I'm able to do and the mods are able to do is feedback stuff but there has to be a decision made at a certain point and we kind of have to stick with that. But I think it's a big stadium and although there's only one date there, in the past, I'm not saying this will happen this time, but in the past when big stadiums have sold out, then, you know.
Yeah, second show.
We might not.
There is a little bit of wiggle room with a couple of those dates in some of the rumored dates that had floated around prior to the original announcement. But if it's not on U2.com, it's not an official date.
It's not real. Not real. And sometimes, I won't say that. But yes, I think we'll keep seeing it and we're. Through experience, it's like things go through that many filters. And when it shows up on YouTube.com, you can kind of bank on it as much as you can bank on anything, really.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't hold out for second shows anyway because, unless that might be the only one. Like Dublin, we thought we would get a second show. It didn't happen. And it can be logistically beyond our control or anyone's control. From YouTube.com or whatever. But hopefully I'd love to see more shows in around the world. Who wouldn't, you know? We've seen stuff today about Australia, New Zealand, rumours I've talked about, and we haven't heard anything, our end, about Australia. But if you look at, sometimes, you know this song, The Little Things That Give You Away? I love that. Do you like that
song?
I'm living it right now.
Do you like that, Sienna? Do you like that?
It's like my favorite new song. Yeah, I love it.
What about where they're doing it in the set? That's so different. You don't see that. Or is that like are bands doing that nowadays? Or they're putting new stuff at the end of a show? I don't know.
Yeah,
you don't see it very often.
No. Like, I was surprised. I guess everyone was that it was at the end because you expect them to end with... Well, I personally expected them to end with Exit and, like, have Joshua Tree at the end. But I really like the way they've done it. It's, like, it's quite a sad conclusion to the show, but it's a really nice one.
Yeah. Well, in the title itself, it cuts on many levels. And I've seen... I can't remember when, but people talk about, like, they give stuff away. The band gives stuff away, like in interviews, like the about where they're going to play. You know, Bono was pretty much told Sill in the Brazilian folk, you know, that the South American dates were coming, and that's about as much as it could. So I'd look back at some interviews and see where it's been mentioned. I wouldn't rule anything out.
which is why fans constantly dig deeper into a simple statement to see what all the hidden meanings are. We've been programmed over decades to do that.
Well, that's the thing. Often in the lyrics, I find in statements, simple statements, you think, oh, well, that's just a simple statement. But then you read it again and you think, oh, actually, it's saying a bit more than it actually does. You know, that's hard to describe.
Yeah,
something I've learned.
Well, the song ends with the end is not coming, the end is not coming, the end is here, and it's the end of the show.
Yeah.
We're warning you.
Yeah. It's coming. It's coming. We're going to walk off the stage now.
So for folks who aren't watching Big Wave, should we read into the fact that there's, who can't see the video version, that there's a didgeridoo and a bag packed with tags for New Zealand behind you? Is that a clue? No, I'm just kidding.
this here, can you see what this is here?
It's a little blown out. Can't quite see, but
that is the original Joshua Tree kind of.
Okay, yeah.
This actually came from Willie Williams through a friend of his, a mutual friend actually, who kindly gave it to me as a backdrop to do the Crystal Ballroom with Tim with one day, and I've hung on to it. He's not getting it back.
Nice.
I can't remember which date it is, but it's one of the indoor shows, I think, of the early Joshua Tree, the original Joshua Tree.
Nice. See me? That's very awesome. Yeah, it's a little blown out, but we can get the idea anyways. You can see the wings of the Joshua Tree there for sure. Sherry, we sort of wanted to touch on the 30th anniversary box set. There is some very, I guess, both the good and the bad of that arriving and some of the stuff, issues possibly, but also just overall impressions of it. So I know Aaron and Sherry, you both held up your respective box sets. Aaron, I guess start with you. What were your impressions of it arriving and sort of the contents and just as a fan and as the dollar value and all that kind of stuff?
I got the LP and the CD versions, and it's splendid. I mean, it really is very, very well made. I was delighted to see mine came absolutely intact, very well packed, very well put together. And, okay, so there's not so much new content in comparison with the 20th anniversary edition, but we've got the live concerts, we've got a few new remixes. I can't say I've listened to everything thus far, but what was fantastic about it, more than anything else for me, was the Edges photography book, which I just thought was absolutely splendid. And you know, is there anything he cannot do? I mean, even the photo, even
release a new album in time.
Give up control.
It really is. It's amazing photographs. You know, from what was 1980, late 1986. You know, and. I mean, you would never believe if he hadn't put his name on it, you would have said that Anton had taken the photographs that good. Quite extraordinary.
Well, how about you, Sherry? What was your which version of it did you get?
I think that it's I've ordered both. I got the CD version from Amazon. Came perfectly packaged, nothing damaged. The only thing missing from my box was the digital download code, which if you go to u2.com/help, you've got contact information there if your box set is missing a code. But I found that I'm very pleased with the CD set, but I ordered the vinyl set first without realizing that there was a CD set. So I've got the vinyl arriving from u2.com. It's supposed to arrive tomorrow. I have heard mixed things about the packaging, that it's that some of the boxes have been arriving damaged, but Live Nation has very generously offered to exchange them, which is good. In some cases, there are multiple pictures of the same Anton Corbin print instead of getting the full array of all different prints. So quality control issues have been shoddy in some of the sets with that, as well as the missing downloads. The main thing is for our friends up in Canada that because it's being delivered via UPS, that that fans in Canada are having to pay an exorbitant amount of money for customs fees, which when it was ordered through U2.com, it wasn't publicized that it would be delivered via UPS. So Big Wave, I don't know if you've been hearing anything in the forums or from Canadian fans disappointed that they're having to pay a customs fee due to the fact that Live Nation is shipping it out UPS as opposed to either Canadian Postal or the United States Postal Service.
Yeah, I saw that from Aaron, mm-hmm. U2 Wanderer Aaron. I was following his kind of thread. But here's the thing with that. I would contact the customer services, be nice to them, and see Canadian. What they say. But if you've ordered through the U2.com shop, use the form and whatnot on the, you can find that on U2.com, the help form. And if you get nowhere, contact us in the forums and we'll try to chase it up. Sometimes, stuff gets lost. But if you've bought like other ways, I think contacting customer services where you've bought it and just explaining you weren't aware. And I think, it'll be interesting to see. Yeah, I'm going to look into that a little bit because it seems a bit high, doesn't it? It seems some of them charges seem a bit.
And the shipping fee is outrageous because the vinyl box set weighs just under 12 pounds. Yeah. This is not a lightweight item.
Yeah. So is that specific to Canada? I think that's that
from
issue.
What I've been seeing. Yeah. Yes, but we also had some of our fellow fan club colleagues over, I think, in Germany, right. Say that when U2.com membership gifts arrived, that they had to pay customs tax on those shipments as well, even though they don't have a specific dollar value. Somehow a dollar value was assigned to it and they had to pay a customs fee on it.
Right. Yeah. And Fabiano in the chat room is saying something similar in Brazil, or where the taxation is 100% the value of the box by our customs and also the currency converter plus 3.5. So, each country will vary, obviously, how they handle out of country deliveries, I guess. And I know if we can't, speaking as the token Canadian on the podcast, it just always depends. You never know when ordering from the US, for example, for us, if they happen to get delivered via UPS or USPS, you sometimes have to pay customs and they sort of ding you there, or sometimes it's you're supposed to do it and you forget or whatever.
Yes. We'll have a similar thing in the UK with the Royal Mail. This is the, and the couriers sometimes, but this sounds like it could be a courier issue, really. That needs to be made aware to UPS specific. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and Fabiano was saying a friend of his got delivered and he had to pay $700, no, $300 in taxes for the vinyl collector's edition or whatever. So
John, it's a bit like the VAT and customs duty. We would have to pay if something came from the United States. When you try and buy something from Amazon.com.
It's
a similar thing. You just get absolutely clobbered. You think you're making a save and then it gets stuck with the Royal Mail or with the courier and then you have to pay
that's why they send them out from Europe. This we'll get them sent out from UK, I think, actually.
I think the sets in the UK would have gone to Germany and the rest of Europe, so there wouldn't have been an issue from a VAT and customs duty perspective, but it's like I said, if there's some subscriber gifts get sent over from the United States and you do have to pay every now and again, it's a bit of pot luck, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, it just so happens that it's on such an expensive item.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
that does explain. It doesn't excuse it, but this is the thing, like, that it's good to know about, because I've noticed one or two posts, but in this day and age, sometimes people only use Facebook or only use Twitter, so we don't always get to know straight away about, like, the trend and kind of...
Yeah, issues that are popping up, yeah.
Yeah, but in what we can do, you know, all we can do is make people aware and give some idea of how the scale of issues, you know. I don't always hear how things work out, but I know for a fact that everything gets looked at, everything practically.
Yeah. Well, and on the flip side, I guess, on the positive side of all of this, the box set or whichever version of this set you got some music and some remixes and some reissues and all that kind of stuff. So for Sienna and I to be able to communicate and join in the conversation, Sienna, what did you think of the, as the token millennial who wasn't alive when Joshua Tree came out, and I wasn't into U2 when Joshua Tree came out either. So what did you think of the reissue, or did you buy it, I guess, first of all? And then what did you think of some of the remixes and stuff?
I haven't actually bought it. I was in town today and I passed like the CD store and I saw it in the window and I got so excited because like they only show like Ed Sheeran and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, it's U2. Anyway, I do really like One Tree Hill. And I'm not so keen on Red Hill Mining Town. Like, it's nice, but I still prefer the original. But yeah, probably One Tree Hill is my favorite.
Nice. Yeah, I was a little like listening through the remixes in particular. So this would be, I guess, disc 3, if I have it right, if the iTunes version matches. I would assume it does. I really like the Red Hill Mining Town Steve Lillywhite remix of it, or whatever you want to call that. But I was particularly, I don't know if disappointed is the right word, but just the Danny Lanois remixes of With or Without You and Running to Stand Still, I felt were like almost took the soul out of, I think I tweeted something about to the effect of they took the soul out of the songs for me. But I love the both the Blue Sky remix actually by Jack Knifley. I would love to hear him remix the whole album just in whatever, like if they give him carte blanche saying do whatever you want with it and did a, you know, whatever, a cover version almost of the whole album just to hear what he would, how he would interpret the whole thing from start to finish. But
the Jack Knifley version sounded like a blend of Bullet the Blue Sky meets Happiness is a Warm Gun.
Yeah. Yeah, he has that just repeating little loop thing that at first I was like, oh, that's going to be annoying. And then all of a sudden it's like, it was stuck with me the whole day. I was walking through Costco and sort of had this thing looping through my brain of that, just that little repeating loop that he was using.
America.
Yeah. And the One Tree Hill, the St. Francis Hotel remix actually really was really good too. I like that a lot.
That's my favorite as well.
Yeah.
I like that one. Yeah.
Which when you, like, given the context of that song, you're kind of like, what are you doing with a remix of a song like that? That's about what it is. And, you know, all that kind of stuff. It feels a little bit more like sacred ground to tread on, but they handled it really well, I think, and did a good job of it. So was there anything on the, I guess the One Tree Hill reprise is kind of the only, which is a 2-minute version of One Tree Hill that Brian Eno mixed, I guess. But other than that, everything on disc 4, all the B-sides and stuff is nothing. There's nothing there that hasn't been released before, if I'm not mistaken.
What I can see, it's all on the 20th anniversary issue. The Joshua Tree itself is just the same remaster, as you'd expect it to be fair. I mean, I'm not quite sure what could be sonically improved on the remaster 10 years on. And the live CD, well, yeah, that seems to be a fairly good cut of the Madison Square Gardens concert. I know a couple of the staff on tours on the Act2 site have mentioned there's probably one or two tracks which have been brought from other concerts, and I'm sure that's because they would have to, because, you know, not every show is perfectly played, and there might be some sonic issues.
I think it was Bullet the Blue Sky is from the November 7th Denver show. Our that's Cracker Jack tour staff had pointed that out.
All right. Well, we've gone back into our long form podcast recording.
There's so much news today,
Chris. I know. It's good. I'm just saying, if Matt McGee listens this long, then that's my excuse for going long. But so Big Wave, go ahead.
I just make one point about the, you know, people, some people had been saying they didn't get the download code in the box. That's been a, that's quite common. But there's, for people who didn't get the download code, if you go to u2.com/help, there's an email on there and a phone number. I think it was mainly North American people, the North American copies of the, that didn't have the download code in. So if you email that email, fisherscustsvc@umusic.com, it's on youtube.com/help. Do you put these links up, Chris, after?
Yeah, it'll be in the our show notes, yeah. So,
and so that's the one that we are pointing people to. I know, Sherry, you've got another customer services thing that's, that you got from...
Yeah, it was tickets at push push rather it was support at pushtickets.com and that was a really quick turnaround time. I had my code within 24 hours and it's a .wav file, not a .mp3, so it's a higher quality download as well.
Right, I think those emails end up at the same place. Actually, I'm pretty sure. But but you've got yours. It seems to work. That one that we've been given, I guess we have to point people to that one. So,
yeah, there's a toll-free number as well, 1-800-288-5942. So you just have to have a proof of purchase, obviously, of the box set. They're not going to just hand you out a code just because you're a YouTuber. I tried already. No, I'm just kidding. But thank you very much, Big Wave, for joining us on the podcast. This is the first time you've been on the show, I think, officially. So. And
can I just say a few thank yous?
Yeah, for sure.
I've been reminded, not that I need reminded, but I do need reminded. I'm getting older and older, as we all are. Just thanks for what you do at YouTube. Thanks for having me on. It's great to connect up like this at times when there's information to hand out. And I know that you guys do a great job. And we try to do the best job we can about pointing people in the right direction. That's the thing. Keep doing what you're doing. I really enjoy the podcasts and the Crystal Ballroom style thing. Connect up again soon, I hope, and I'll speak to you all. Hopefully I'll meet some of you soon at the tour.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be awesome. And enjoy the New Zealand, Australia trip you may be going on. I'm just kidding. We have New Zealand and Australian listeners who always are good sports about being the furthest away on these tour announcements and stuff. So hopefully they get their present before Christmas too. But thank you very much, Big Wave, for coming on. Somehow we've lost Sienna along the way here, but thanks, Sienna, if you watch us later, for coming on. And Sherry and Aaron, so where can folks follow you if they need to disagree or agree or thumbs up or whatever on the Twitters or whatever? Aaron, we'll start with you since you're below me here.
Yeah, you can contact me on at Ivanobe, IvanObe.
And Sherry, how about you?
And I'm still at U2Com Sherry. Not Matt McGee, as it says underneath here.
And Big Wave, do you give out the Twitter handle, your Twitter handle, or do you prefer people not to know you?
Oh, no, I think there's a couple. We've got the at U2Com. No, sorry, that's you, Sherry.
At Matt McGee. I already answered too many of your questions.
Yeah, and we appreciate it. U2Com Zoo Mods is our Zoo Mod account. U2Com Zoo Mods. That me, Max, and Michelle kind of help out with, and U2 Community is the one that I help out with, which is more of a vibey thing. But like, generally on that when the shows are on, and you know. It's like a vibey thing. And I've got a personal email, which is very politically minded at the minute. Nothing to do with you two. It's @_bigwave_. And I won't tell you who I'm going to vote for in our elections on Thursday, but I'll tell you who I won't be voting for.
All right. And Sienna, you've joined us just as we're saying our goodbyes. What's your Twitter handle for folks who are curious if they want to tweet at you.
It's at Sienna _ James with a Z instead of an S.
All right, and I'm iChris on the Twitters. You can follow at U2 at twitter.com/ATU2, facebook.com/AtU2com. And what am I forgetting? I'm doing this from memory. I should probably look. I think that's it for this episode. And you can find previous episodes of the podcast, goodstuff.fm/ATU2. And our thanks to Simon Peta, at Simon Peta on the Twitters, for the theme song that you heard at the beginning and the end of this episode. And until next time, thanks for listening. Have a great day. Adios.